I was sitting here thinking about something, I guess, that's kind of funny. I don't know if it's really funny or not. Everyone can see I'm changing all my posters around. I actually got some new wallpaper up, hoping to finish this studio up by the end of the week, I hope, but we shall see. But one segment you've actually not done on the show yet is a Wild Card Wednesday day. And that's pretty much like I have no plans. I have no like big news things to like share and stuff like that. And we make up stuff and call it Wild Card Wednesdays. But there is a couple of small things that we could potentially talk about. I got some video game stuff. There's some comic book related stuff, and it is Comic Book Wednesday. And I know Manny's a big comic book fan. So yeah, we got a few things that I think we could talk about. What do you think, Manny?
Whatever, man. I'm here for
Oh man. Let's do this intro thing. Welcome to the show. Today's episode is proudly sponsored by Grow Generation, where the pros go to grow. More on them in a bit. Yeah. One of the video game things I wanted to bring up is like a it's a real big pain in the ass for a lot of people. You know who Gabe Newell is?
Nope.
The guy that Valve, Steam, Half-Life, Portal, that guy. Okay? He's the guy that, in charge over there at Valve, helped bring, what we know as Half-Life to life and all of that. And most people out there in pop culture, whether they played Half-Life, they're a fan or not, they know a little bit about the like meme of where's Half-Life 3, Half-Life 3 confirmed, like numerology. Like it's this big thing about the sequel to this amazing series that we've been waiting on forever, and instead we got, Half-Life Alyx, which was a VR game. Anyways, he was speaking at Sancta M Maria College in Auckland, New Zealand, and this is according to IGN, actually has it up, and I'll share that. Talking about porting games from Steam o over to consoles, games that are on Steam only, and you start thinking of, they've already done ports of like Portal, Half-Life 1 and 2, back with the orange box on the PS3, I think. But there's a lot more out there, including a lot of indie games. And Steam was one of the earliest pioneers in not, I mentioned yesterday how they allow people to use their open source engine and not just for filmmaking, but other things as well, making games, and they really helped push indie game developers, giving them a platform to not just develop the game, have a community to help develop that game where you can meet others, but to publish and eventually sell that game. And in a world where I think, I don't know about Microsoft, but I know Sony's done an okay job at allowing a lot of indie games on its PlayStation network. I think this idea, he was asked about porting the games to consoles, and he says you will have a better idea of that by the end of this year. I personally would love to see Steam's at least their mentality about indie game development and publishing. If not necessarily Steam available on consoles, I would really like to see that m mentality taken up. What do you think, Manny?
I think more people that can be creative and have their their vision, their product, their games out, the better. I don't use Steam because I'm not really a big gamer at all. So I don't know too much about it.
But the indie developer thing, like when we talked about indie films yesterday, you know, it's it's such a – you and I grew up in a time where we got to look at all these things and go, oh, man, I wish I could do that, or I wish I could do this. And by the time the technology and the cost efficiency was able for us to do it, we already had other careers and had moved on into other things. And but the cool thing is this kind of makes it not too late. Like, if you still want to get into CG animation, you can. If you want to get into game development, you can. And remote working, even one of the double-edged swords, but I guess potentially has a better thing to come out of the pandemic is that remote working is, again, putting more efficient technology in people's hands to do indie stuff like make movies, comics, and video games. So I'm pretty happy about that. The next thing I kind of saw going on this Wild Card Wednesday was New York completed their Javits Center expansion. Have you been to Javits? Have you done New York Con?
No, I don't even know what that is.
Okay, so the Javits Center is the like primary area in New York for New York Comic Con, like the San Diego Convention Center.
Oh, okay.
But unlike San Diego, well, years ago, where the majority was right there at the convention hall and then the immediate like hotels right there, New York Con is spread out from Javits to Madison Square Garden, the Hammerstein Ballroom, I think it's called, in theater. And then there's some other place where they do like the book con and anime part. But they got a big expansion going on for that, which is cool. I think they definitely needed it after being there a couple times. And they're supposed to have a convention this fall, Manny, in New York. Capacity things and panels are being discussed, but that's pretty cool to me. I'm excited for the convention scene coming up. And yeah, man, how you feel about conventions, especially since you're the interview guy? You kind of have to go. We're gonna force you to.
Well, I don't have to go.
I'm joking.
I'm just clarifying that. Yeah, I'm at the first convention that I'm able to go to. I'm vaccinated, and honestly, I don't care. Well, especially because the rest of my family is also vaccinated.
Yeah,
friends and family vaccinated because we're not morons. So we've made sure that we're all taken care of. So yeah, I mean, It's just a celebration of pop culture more than anything. It's that camaraderie, because I don't see studios and publishers foaming at the mouth to go to conventions this year. So it's going, the 2021 conventions are probably just going to be more of a test run, I feel, to see how it all works out and work it out for 2022. And we'll see. We'll see how that San Diego one works out. But obviously, then New York one's first, so it's gonna be interesting. I'm a West Coast guy, so I usually don't travel far east to New York.
Yeah, the thing about the conventions that I worry about is kind of the same thing with streaming services. I look at all these studios. They start their own services and now we're overloaded with all this stuff, and it's been happening for a few years. We've seen Disney at multiple times take a step back from San Diego. You know, hey, big Marvel stuff this year, no Marvel stuff the following year, and it kind of depends on, do they have a D23 that year? Is Star Wars Celebration going to have big now? Like, all of that feeds into it, and I look at DC fandom, and I look at what like I just mentioned Disney doing, and I'm both kind of scared but also excited for conventions. And I guess maybe not just Wild Card Wednesday, but Indie Wednesday, or going back to Basics Wednesday, because again, I think that this could potentially see some of these conventions take a turn back, like you said, towards the fans, not the studios, and towards the creators, not the companies that hired the creators. But at the same time, I saw the War Machine reveal trailer in Hall H. I'm gonna miss that. What do you think about the future of the big conventions? Do you think studios are gonna come back, or do you really see them pushing on with their own stuff from here on out?
Yeah, I don't see why they necessarily come back. You're going to set up your own event, which is probably going to cost you as much, if not less, than attending a big convention, and you're going to get a whole day to yourself, which is probably going to carry over to 2 or 3 days of publicity because you're going to plan it not around anybody else. While if you're at a San Diego, by midday, you're part of an article that says what you may have missed. So
That's true.
I don't, just like Disney's doing D23, Warner Brothers is doing fandom. I mean, hell, they Warner Brothers didn't even have a DC comic book area anymore. This last San Diego before the pandemic, it was all part of the Warner Brothers
Jeez,
area,
that's
and
crazy.
yeah, it was stupid. But that's just how the mentality of Warner Brothers is.
Yeah,
They
that's dumb.
really don't give a shit about the comics, and it's really sad.
Yeah.
But yeah, it would be nice. I think, yeah, the focus goes back up to the creators, the cosplayers, and of course the comic books, because that's what the conventions were originally. I think it was Twilight that really ruined conventions that one year.
2009.
See,
I
everybody knows
remember
that
it.
because it's
We know
almost
that
like
year.
that Justice League, when the bell rang, that cannot be unrung.
I mean, it's kind of an unfortunate that everyone can literally point to that. And I almost feel bad because I was there, and that was when I was kind of a I was still that haha, like when DC movies didn't do well. Like that was my mentality. 2008. How old was I? It's 22. 2009. I was 23. Coming back from Iraq. I'd been back from Iraq a couple years, and I can remember all of those tense moments where it was like, there's Twilight fans in line at what the fuck is Twilight doing in Hall H, and why are you guys taking up lines? Don't you understand there's like Iron Man shit coming out or something, and don't you understand that Kevin Smith's going to be in here? And that was the year, I don't know if you were there or Jammer was there, but that was the year in Hall H where he was talking about the tw tw Kevin Smith was talking about the Twilight fans, and some I don't remember if it was a guy or a girl, but someone had a bag that their spouse or significant other, mom, someone made, and they wanted to give one to Kevin, because I guess his wife's a Twilight fan, or maybe it was Harley. But anyways, they gave him the bag, and it was a dude, and the dude got to spend the rest of the show on stage while Kevin's talking. And Kevin, like, I don't know if you could get away with it today, but he like randomly like walks behind him, starts giving like a shoulder rub and stuff. Just I miss stuff like that. But I felt bad later on because Twilight got so much hate and blame for ruining conventions. And I can blame the studio, but we really shouldn't necessarily blame the fans, because they looked at all the fun we were having and they just wanted to have fun too. The studios, in my mind, ruined it.
So I don't think the studios ruined it, and I don't blame the fans either. If you have a product that's popular, things like that are going to happen,
That's true.
and then it only gets bigger and bigger and bigger, And the only reason a studio will put out something like that, or even start putting up tents, because people are going to do it for days and days, people are going to show up. If the people didn't show up, the studios wouldn't do it. If the studios, you want as much publicity for your product. So as annoying as it is, I'm going to be honest with you. I've been to, what, 3, I think now, Comic-Cons. And before that, before LRM, I refused to make my own plans. And I refused to put myself in any type of virtual queue or whatever to try and secure at least one day for San Diego. Jace can tell you, he begged me for years to make plans for San Diego. And I say, nah, not doing it. Not worth my trouble. Did I want to be there? Yes. But not at the expense of all of the hassle to be there. And sometimes even just for one day, because you can only get a pass for a certain amount of days. It wasn't until I was part of press and I was enjoying the entire experience that I made some adjustments and then made it happen. But I've never been a Hall H guy. Like, you're going to, I get it that for some people, like, that's all they're about, and that's fine. That's okay. That's the beauty of conventions, is that there's so many aspects to it that you can, if that's your entire goal for the day, is to be part of that Hall H panel, in that room when they reveal something, then that's great. That's your convention. That's your experience. That's what you want. And that's, and you know, we always say, Jason, I always say, make a list, because more than likely you're only going to be able to do one or two of those things a day, depending on what you want to do. I'm to the point now, I go to so many conventions, I'm about the camaraderie, I'm about the friends, I'm about the people, going to say hi to people at different spots all over. And then obviously having to go from one building to another because I have an interview and an interview and an interview and a round table and a meet and greet and all this other stuff. And man, get my steps in those days.
Oh man. Yeah. But, I found that I spent the majority of our time for the things that we liked, other than, like I said, Kevin Smith and the Iron Man thing, 6 A and B and 20 ballroom 20. Like, I think we spent most of our time with like Simpsons stuff, Futurama's stuff, Battlestar Galactica's stuff. All of that was in 20, 6 A, 6 B. And then all of the really, really smaller rooms where, like, J. Michael Straczynski gave basically a creative writing class for an hour, as that was his panel. You know, it was great because he opened it up with, like, if you're here to ask me how to sell your stuff and learn how to make money, get out now. I'm giving you time. I'm not going to answer any of those question and type things. Leave. And somebody got up and thought they were sly and could, like, work around it. And it didn't end very well for them. But that's the kind of the cool thing about conventions, is the fact that you could get such a different. Who would go to a convention to take a creative writing? Who would think of that? But it was a full room. I mean, absolutely. JMS.
I've attended so many panels on how to be a better reporter, on how to be part of a better site. How to do things like that, just because I want to get better. I want to be better at what I do. And if there's going to be some successful people talking about it, I want to be there. Jason and I covered so many, like, just coloring panels on Richard Friend, Nor Ratman, and others, like inkers too. This would be not colorists. These are inkers that just talked about how they inked. And we're such a fan of the product of comic books, that something that interests us. But that's also another beauty of cons, especially San Diego, bigger ones. There's so many panels that people are kind of enamored with the big ones. Sometimes you get a more intimate setting with some of these smaller ones, and it makes for a really, really good time. And yeah, it's fun. And then something else we love to do, usually on Sundays, because Sundays you get the best deals. We have a list of books we want. We have T books that we want to add to our collection. and we share the list with each other, and we kind of divide and conquer and find our books and see if we can find one at a good, decent price. See, for me, I'm not about the rating. I'm not about the quality of the book.
Mm-hmm.
I'm about owning the book.
Got it.
I'm not planning on selling them. This is for me. This is comic books are part of history to me. That's what they mean to me. So I look for the books to own a copy of it, not necessarily to sell it. So like I own a not so great copy of Secret Wars where the black Spider-Man suit's on the cover. I own the first appearance of Doomsday. I own some key Heroes in Crisis books and books that are important to me, not necessarily what's hot or whatever. And it's so rewarding to be looking at those long boxes and then pulling it out and then sometimes seeing a good price and going, you know, and there's nothing like it to hold a part of history and especially comic book history. And then knowing that you it's going to be yours. That's so much fun, man.
It is. I mean, I'm not going to tilt my camera up. You guys can see, like, I got those Ghostbuster figures back there. I know people that bought like twos and threes so they could open one and do a setup like I got, and then have a bunch of boxed ones. I've never really been that way. There's a few things. Not gonna lie, I have got some stashed Cara Dune toys that I would love to flip. Not like ridiculously, but I don't like. I got mine and they were inexpensive, and I was like, yeah, so somebody wants these, I could, you know, 20-30% sure, why not. That's better than what people are doing with like graphics cards and other things. But I'm with you on that. Like Mighty Morphin Power Rangers through the Shattered Grid arc, right? Not the most limited press, but also not the most widely released first printings. I said press, printings. And so even early when that book was first released, you had comic book shops like legitimately 2 days after, you know, you're talking about by the weekend, that issue that was just $3.99 or $4.99 or whatever it was now $6-$7, and it's the standard cover simply because they sold out of it all already. And I'm not gonna do that. I'm gonna hold on to that collection forever. I literally got on one of the coolest books to hit the, especially the indie scene with Boom Studios in years, and I've got the whole first run mostly mint. Yeah, they've been read and there's, you know, issues, but I don't think I'll ever sell that. I would hope that I could pass them on and one day they'll sit in some distant relative's collector box, or maybe not even a relative, some random person, you know, my estate's sold off and some kid that got into Power Rangers through their great grandfather or some shit finds it at a yard sale. I love stuff like that. And you're right. That's one of the, I think one of the things that really goes overlooked at conventions is that Sunday buying time, and the fact that you have a lot of vendors that are, really don't want to pack things up and they don't want to ship it home. They want to pay rates. They don't want to pay to luggage on plane. Yeah. Like, guys, you can don't try to haggle Thursday. Go on Sunday and you could probably get some really cool deals because they want to go and they want to go light.
Yeah, as light as possible.
So yeah, I like that idea. Oh God,
one thing I've always found concerning at conventions is people's lack of knowledge as to the people behind their creations.
Mm-hmm.
I was at a Long Beach where people were asking who's that behind the table. It was Mark Guggenheim. And it's some of the other big wig CW people that you cannot touch anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I was having a conversation with Jeff Johns on the floor, and nobody gives shit. Nobody knew who he was. Somebody asked me. He's like, hey, who's that guy we're talking to? We were talking with who that? Oh, Scott Snyder. So many times. Just on the floor. Jeff Lemire.
Oh God, I would love to speak with Jeff.
I mean,
Jeff.
I mean, just so many people we talk to. We know who they are, and so we just go up to them and talk with them. But unless we found out that unless you put them behind a table with a card with their name on it, we don't know who they are. it's so mind-boggling. Like there was this one Long Beach where what's his name? I can't remember. I'm gonna tell you, like, empty tables where you could just walk up to Mark Wolfman and talk to him about Titans or even some of his other creations. Lean Wayne, he's such an important person in comics also. And so many others. I'm just naming a couple that are like, I mean, just like old school people that, like, when Jason and I do comic book like convention preps, we're like, do your research. Who's going to be here? There's some of these people you really want to talk to because you don't know how long, number one, they have because they're getting up there in age. And number two, these guys paved the way for everything that's happening now in DC, Marvel, and indie comics. So make some time to go say hi, to get something signed. Hell, whatever. Just go talk to these guys because these are the legends that are in documentaries about how we got to where we are in comics and movies and TV shows.
You know who I got to talk to at one of the smaller conventions in Richmond, Virginia? And Bagley. I mispronounced his name with him once. I can't remember. He's Canadian, so I wanted to say Bagley because fucking Canadians can't say their A's right. I'm messing around, Mark. Don't hate me. Anyways, no, he's not Canadian. He was American, born in Germany. That's what it was. I was looking at his wiki, and it just said he was in a Toronto Comic Con. But anyways, I got to meet him, and a lot of people though don't understand like the path he took and the path that Wade took and those height of Marvel writers and artists, you know. Wade and Bagley are just freaking amazing to listen to hear what it was like in the comics industry and what it was like to get into the comics industry. I agree, man. Go out there, get some stuff signed, and don't always worry about it being valuable to anyone else other than you. But I'll tell you what is valuable, and that is your time and money. And the, you know, if you're going to be growing stuff, you want to go where the pros go, and definitely that's growgeneration.com. Take it away, Cam.
Grow Generation, where the pros go to grow. For all of your cultivation needs, Grow Generation has the right products, service, and staff to make your grow successful. Go to www.growgeneration.com, where the pros go to grow.
There, see? I can segue. Yeah.
Well, I got some awesome news.
What's that?
Book news. That was just dropped yesterday. I don't know if you're familiar with the book from Image Comics called Bitter Root.
No.
So that's an Eisner Award winning comic book by David F. Walker. It is phenomenal. Takes place in the 1924s during the Harlem Renaissance and follows the Sangiri family.
I think I've heard something about this.
They're monster hunters.
Yeah.
And they've done it for generations. And like the supernatural part of it is that, so the evil that they fend off, the monsters that they have to fight, are fed by prejudice, are fed by hate, are fed by pretty much everything that was affecting the culture at the time, and to be honest, still to this day. But he's taken this concept and turned it into almost like a monster hunter. I even get some Ghostbusters vibe at times, and has made a phenomenal story of it, enough that it won an Eisner. well deserved. And so it had been announced that it was being turned into a feature film. And so yesterday's news was that the director for it going to be none other than Regina King.
Yep.
And I couldn't be more excited, man. After what she did in One Night in Miami, mm-hmm. after her role in Watchmen, the award-winning role, by the way, I mean, I don't think I could have thought of picking the better person, who's I think is going to get the essence of this, is going to get the right themes, the right people, and it's gonna be done very,
what
very
studio
well.
Is
Legendary Pictures.
Okay, and are they actually just distributing, or are they actually producing it? How much is Warner Brothers gonna fuck with it? No, I'm joking. Anyways, that's cool.
As far as I know, Legendary has a stranglehold on it.
Good. Yeah.
That's going to be good. It's going to be real good.
That is a really cool take on things. And of course, you know, I'm sure there'll eventually be some sort of online controversies about the subject matters and topics, but that's such a fucking cool idea. How many times have we seen the story of the monster that feeds on fear, the monster that feeds on sadness, the monster that feeds on this, that, and the other? Why not have the monster that feeds on other negative feelings? And not only that, but it's an obvious metaphor to the idea of that monster hunting people down in the past, whether it was legit, you know, violence or, you know, mental, emotional harassment. I mean, and the idea of somebody feeling empowered to be able to write a story about people in that time to fight back. And like you said, give you and look, Manny's even said it, like there's no better time in America than right now. Like you wouldn't want to go back to the 1920s, and you don't really, most people really don't, if they knew or if they had the chance to experience a lot of other countries, they would come back here, because despite the issues, things can always get better. We should always strive for that, but things are better today than, of course, 1980, 1960, 40, 20.
I would want to go back to 2019. So
yeah, I'll give you that. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
Endgame. Avatar wasn't the number one movie anymore because Disney was stupid and let James Cameron release that shit in China because he knew it wasn't going to make jack shit over here.
China's the bane of the existence of the. We talked about it 2 days ago or yesterday. Yeah.
You know what's
China ruins things as far as filmmaking, because then they keep making bad films. Yeah. Because China buy. I don't know what it is that they see in these films.
I already told you. I told you, man. It's the spectacle film for them. For us, there's a source that we're really connected to. But I hate speaking like in third or second or whatever, but some of the Chinese fans, of course, are diehards like us with rooms like this, but in general, I think their audience looks at an Avengers film the same way we looked at, like I said, like Independence Day. It's a spectacle film, and there's just a lot more people there, so the spectacle films can make a lot more money.
This is true.
So, let's see here. There was an interesting thing about comic books. Most people know that the industry in America is rough. You've got stores shutting down. You had declines in sales over years and years and years. You have the industry itself, like Manny pointed out, Warner Brothers not supporting their own imprint, issues with Diamond, the largest distributor, and now they lost Marvel too. Marvel's going with Penguin again. Yep. They did that back in the day, I think. And they lost DC a while ago, and hell, there's even been rumors of Warner Brothers completely spinning off the publishing arm, and you know, they'd maintain a majority stake in it, but you know, just the idea of all that is frustrating. However, with that void, there has been something coming in to fill it. Do you know what that is?
No.
Manga. Ugh. Japanese comics, light novels, graphic novels. As a matter of fact, the Japanese manga industry sales value is approximately $5.6 billion right now. I'll turn off the...
I think that also has to do in its correlation with the fact that anime is more popular.
Yes,
than ever.
Exactly.
Hell, Dragon Slayer is the number one film in the United States in 2020 so far.
Exactly. So this is moderngentleman.net. It is a fairly recent article from, I think it was April 20th. And I just found this while we were looking around, and they just had some interesting stats, you know, like the first comic book marketed under that term, 1897 in the UK. I didn't know that. Did you know that? I had no idea that the first time comic book was used was in the UK. That's so weird. And then in the 19th century at that. think about this. 7.14 billion global comic book industry. Japan makes up 5.6 with manga. That is insanity. That means between Boom, Marvel, IDW, Image, DC, Dark Horse, every indie group, every Chinese publisher, every European publisher, everyone else out there makes up $2 billion of $7 billion, while one country's thing, and like you said, it's because of the spread of anime, makes up, you know, what, three-fifths of it? Four-fifths of it? That's insanity to me. Batman's still the most popular comic book character. And this is pretty cool. 31.6% of comic book artists now are female. Yeah. Anyway, that's what I found. Manga only got about an 8% decline from the pandemic. And 6% of Americans aged 18 to 34 read comics every month. So yeah, there's some fun comic book stats. Manny, what do you think? Any of those interesting to you?
Nothing I could say that really surprises me. Because we talked to so many comic book artists and writers, you kind of get a sense of how many women are in the industry, which is a lot. And so that's not a surprising stat. I thought it might be a little bit higher than that, a couple of percentages, but overall pretty good. Yep. I will be honest, I don't think I will ever get into manga. I think even with the anime that I've watched, I don't have the time for it. I don't have the time for regular comics right now. The only thing I'm making time for is anything that's Bad Idea, and then the War of the Bounty Hunters.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what I'm making time for. Other than that, right now it's just not happening for me, man. And it's kind of annoying. Because that's where I started, man. That's that's the reason why I did what I did, because I wanted to get free comic books and to talk to the creators, and I ended up going kind of like The Flash, where I went too far, and it was like, oh damn it, I went too far. And now there's no looking back. So, but I appreciate it though.
Yeah, I found the 6% of Americans 18 to 34 read comics every month to be a very important thing that I wanted to bring up, because I'm over that age now. I'm over 34 by a few years, and That's a very key demographic, 18 to 34. And then when you think of television, people are always looking at the 18 to 45. When you look at the economy, 18 to 45, maybe 18 to 50, depending on the field. But 6% of our young adults are reading these comics every month. And I don't look 31% of artists being female. That's great. I thought, like you, maybe the artists would be more. I expected probably less writers for some reason. But the artists I thought would be higher. Maybe that's because I know a lot more females that draw than I knew that write. But that's a, you know, personal experience thing. But still, I look at that 6% thing, and I look at Twitter every day, and I see, you know, I don't want to sound like a boomer, or I'm a millennial, people. But the youth today, I often wonder how much context do they look at when they say, I want Avengers 5, but I'm not going to buy an Avengers comic book, t-shirt, figurine, video game, but I want the Avengers 5, and I want it on Disney Plus for free at home, and it better be a $250 million movie. I don't know. No, people can spend their money on what they want. It's scary, man. I don't think comics will go away, but 6%, dude, that's... And studios are only going to want, like, the Warner Brothers, go away, DC. Is it scary? Are you scared? Like, worried?
No, it's a phase. Like, it has happened in history before. It's just sad because the product isn't good. It's just kind of how do you support Marvel, for example? All they like to do is reboot their series. And the perfect example for that is the X-Men series, House of X, Powers of X, where I was like, yes, jumping on point. We're gonna start fresh.
We're gonna restart.
And I'm at the point again where I'm like, what the fuck is going on? So like convoluted again. And then where do you jump on? Where do you jump on? Like where can I read Captain America? Well, right now Captain America's doing this. Where can I read Iron Man? Well, right, it's Ironheart and blah blah. Where can I see that classic 90s X-Men? Luckily they have this Legends book where they're finishing a couple of stories, which has been fantastic. It really has that 90s feel to it that everybody wants and has allowed me to read it. But like, it's confusing. Like what is going on? Where are the characters that you're showing me on screen? At least the classic ones, right? Mm-hmm. It's just not happening. And then you have DC, who is not really worried about continuity anymore, is not really worried about proper storytelling. I don't know what they're doing. And I mean, New Frontier, all that stuff, I jumped off, completely jumped off. I don't think I've read a DC book since January.
Ooh.
No, that should tell you something.
Yeah. I look at your background and your hat and stuff.
I'm a DC guy, bro.
I know. Like,
Batman's my favorite superhero. I love going to Six Flags because of the themed areas. I can tell you that it's nothing has caught my attention anymore. I'm going to give it a shot again in the next few weeks. I've got a couple of books that I bought. But and so because of that, how do I expect people to care? How can I be excited to tell friends about a certain book? Dude, you got to read this because blah 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 blah. I don't have that right now. I can't do that. So I mean, if a comic enthusiast like me isn't excited, why would the average 18 to 36 year old be excited?
Yeah, I could definitely see that.
And then I think that you know, it's interesting because the comments Mickey Rourke made about Marvel movies.
Mm-hmm.
He's just salty because the stuff got cut. But but I get it, though. Very unpopular opinion. But Marvel movies are cookie cutter films. They're
very, very similar in theme, taste, everything. They're very, very in every aspect. They're the same thing, which is why they don't win as many awards. I mean, Black Panther won awards because it was different. It had something we hadn't really seen before, as far as Wakanda culture. It was beautiful. It was great. And this is why you've seen a couple more Academy Awards over at the DC side, because they're willing to take risks with their product.
Well, the Suicide Squad one's stupid. That there's no makeup effects like Killer Croc. No, that's not Oscar makeup.
But costumes been, or effects. But they have more. They have more Oscars overall. Yeah. And that's to say that they're okay. So a lot of them do suck. I'm not gonna lie, but because of that, they have some gems because they take risks and they do something a little bit different than the same movie we're used to seeing over at Marvel, which don't get me wrong, I still have fun with, but it's not like a transcendent movie. It's not oh my God. Like,
I think I definitely agree. Whenever we get origin stories, 1,000%, the sequels are here and there are hit and miss. I would say that overall, I think, Marvel's biggest issue has been, having to hold our hands for some of it because of the studios, whether it's Marvel or Disney, whoever, their lack of faith in the audience, you know, their lack of faith in us and not just general audiences, but even super fans' ability to explain things to our friends and family that aren't super fans. Like, guys, we got this. You guys make the movie. We'll explain it to everyone here on LRM and LR Mornings and other shows. And then they could go watch the movies and fully enjoy them without you having to smack us in the face with stupid exposition.
Yeah. And I don't know. Maybe it's because of the fact that I'm watching so much more independent stuff and getting into other genres a lot more than I used to be. But Manny 2 years ago does not enjoy this Marvel the same way I do now.
Yeah. There's this thing, and I don't know how much of that video I sent you yesterday you watched, but at the end of this video that I sent you, it's that funny life cycle of an otaku fan. The end result is the same for almost every genre. When you're growing up and you first get into comic books or something like that, sci-fi, anime, whatever it is, every niche has got its, I don't mean this in the way that it's used today, but it's got its gatekeepers to get into it, which means your welcome packet. I'm not saying you can't be here unless you like this and this. I'm talking about the people that give you your first to watch list or to read list, your mandatory. This is what makes you a Marvel comic fan. This is what makes you a gamer for, you know, the 80s or 90s or whatever. This is what makes you a manga fan. That's what I'm getting at. And everyone gets into those niches through those very popular things. And then you grow up some and you start learning that there's more out there. And that's when you go through the massive ingestion of everything you can get, because this is all brand new to you. You've never been exposed to anything like it before, and everything's freaking amazing. And then you get burned out on it because you start learning, oh, not everything is amazing. But at that same point, you find other people in your niche, and they tell you that have been there for a while, and they're like, oh, you only got the starter package, man. Here's your booster pack. Here's your level up experience. And they introduce you to like a higher level of horror, a higher level of comic books, you know? Yeah. And then you go and become an elitist piece of shit. And I've been there. Most people will be there at some point. And eventually you'll get burned out on that too, because then you're going to do the same thing. You're going to try to be the elitist piece of shit that you are and consume all the elitist stuff so you can pontificate and opine and sound really, really smart. And you're going to realize one day that that's not making you happy either. And you're going to go back and you're going to pick up a crappy issue of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers Shattered Grid. And you're gonna pick up Scrubs season 3. You're gonna pick up Batman 352, and you're gonna read it, and you're gonna realize, fuck that elitist shit, man. I like this. I like this right here is what got me there. This feels good. I love this. You're gonna go back. You're gonna read it, and you're gonna realize that it's all good. Like it's all encompassing from the garbage, trashiest trash that you loved as a 12-year-old when you first discovered whatever it was, to the most high-end, what's the word? Cerebral thriller you've ever seen. And that cycle, that joy, that journey, whether it's in film, games, comics, horror, all of that. I don't know if the youth today, Manny, understand how lucky they are that they have all of that, and for the majority of them, they'll never have to worry about being made fun of for it or be alone for it.
Be the only one. Mm-hmm.
Be the only gamer in their classroom, the only comic book fan in their classroom, the only anime fan in their classroom, the only film buff that's seen things like Memento or watches black and white foreign films or knows what Suspiria is before 2019, you know?
Here's an example of that right now.
Go ahead.
Middle school, man, I was so into Magic the Gathering. That was my thing, man. Card games, lunch, whatever. And made fun of, and you know, all that great stuff, because you know, you're playing a nerdy card game or whatever. And for years I had 2-3 friends that played it. Right now, I think I have about 10 or 12 friends all of a sudden who have decided to pick up Magic. So confusing, because I don't know where it came from or why all of a sudden everyone's picking it back up. But and I'm like, wait a minute, this was stuff that people were made, and then everyone's wearing Deadpool t-shirts, everyone's all, you know, Endgame and Marvel, Avengers, Disney, or whatever, this and that. It's like, all right, where were you guys in the 90s? Like, what
happened? I needed friends, man. I was alone.
Yeah. So for some people, I think that you call elitist, there also may be that little bit of resentment, where it's like, you guys don't even know.
Yeah.
Like, you guys are fan now because it's popular in pop culture. Mm. But you guys weren't around when it really, I, you know, I'm going to roll my eyes at myself when I even say this, but when it really mattered.
Yeah.
To say that, yeah, I'm a fan of this product. You're a fan of what they're telling you to like, not at the
brand.
The brand, you know, the Batman brand, the Superman brand.
I can see
Man, Spider-Man.
Like, yeah.
So, well, because it will bring back a couple of bad moments, bad memories. I think I've talked about it before. There's a couple of moments like that in the Big Bang Theory that they go through that I can relate to, because it hits like when they're making fun of him or for some reason. Like, there's this one moment in the Big Bang Theory where what's the main character's name? I've been binge watching this whole thing and I can't even remember.
Sheldon? I don't know.
No, Sheldon is
he's got another show, so I figured
Sheldon
he was the main
is special. I love Sheldon. Leonard's. Jesus.
Okay.
Leonard really wants to impress Penny.
Right.
But he has been told wrongly that it's because of his passion and love for sci-fi and comic books and things like that he will never get a girlfriend because mm-hmm. he's not a grown, he's a child. And so he
it's
is getting
phase. You haven't grown up yet.
Yeah. So he's getting rid of everything just so that he can try and move on. And this to him is going to fix it. And now he's going to be able to move on and be an adult and have a relationship with the girl, which is ultimately what he wants. And what, mm-hmm. I mean, for people, regardless of what your preference is, to have a relationship.
Want a partner. Yeah. Yeah, most partner. People want a romantic partner of some sort in their lives. No, not all, then, but most.
And so, and I remember going through a phase in my late teens where I kind of changed my entire personality to try and fit in better with the popular crowd. And it took me a couple of years to get out of it and then realizing that I wasn't happy.
Mm-hmm.
But it goes back to everything you're saying, and it's crazy, right? To think of how everyone's into Star Wars now, right? All of a sudden, everyone's always been a fan.
Yeah. Yeah. So much so that the people that actually have always been fans aren't allowed sometimes anymore. I'll tell you what I'm most happy about, though, as a as a parent, is that, look, bullying is always going to exist, and to a degree, some bullying, specific, is part of the natural growing up process, part of being an adult, even, and teaching you resiliency, like how to cope with it, you know?
How to deal with adversity, yeah.
Exactly. I've always been a big fan of self-deprecation as a disarming tool against bullies, because I've got this crooked-ass nose that gives me the nasally voice from an accident when I was young, besides the stutter. So everyone's always made fun of my voice, and even in the Army, like, some peer of mine's like started holding his nose and making fun of my voice. It's like, oh yeah, real brilliant. You're the first person to ever point out that I've got a nasally voice. I'm gonna go over here and cry my eyes out and just ignored him. And it's like that type of stuff is because, oh, my light went out. My battery died. Oh well, it's telling us to hurry up. But anyways, it's because I did take flack as a kid. But while it hurts, you got to learn some resiliency. Some of us went through more than others, and no one should go through too much. But yeah, resiliency is important. So let's go ahead and wrap this up, ladies and gentlemen. We need you to do a couple of things for us. One, you need to be checking out LRMonline.com every single day for all of your entertainment news, needs, and opinions. Second, we really need you guys to head over to the YouTube channel if you haven't already. Head over to our Twitter at LRM underscore exclusive. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Follow LRM online. Like I said, at LRM underscore exclusive. And follow Manny and I down below. Because coming up tomorrow on our live show, we have got Cruella giveaway. Manny, would you like to talk a little bit about what we will be giving away to tomorrow and why they need to follow us? Because that's when we're going to give the rules for the contest away.
Because tomorrow during our live show, we're gonna go ahead and start giving away the first of 5 pairs of tickets, so that you can type that in. Thanks to Disney's Cruella, which is out May 28th of this month in theaters and on Disney Plus Premiere. You gotta be here. You gotta listen, because we're going to ask you a question, and only on the live show, you're going to get the question, and based on what the answers we get on our Twitter feed at LRM exclusive. That's our Twitter, right?
At LRM
underscore exclusive is we'll go ahead and pick a random winner. We're going to do this 5 times in the next few weeks, mm-hmm. up to the premiere. Hell, we may even throw in a poster mm-hmm. of the film. You never know. But it's good times. And thanks again to working with Disney and with Cruella, and that way you go check it out with your family safely at your local theaters, because everything's opening back up, man. Get out there and support your local theaters, especially their independent theaters, man, the ones that are locally owned. Get out there and make it happen
safely and responsibly, and following all local rules and regulations. I hate that we have to say crap like that. God damn. People, get over her it. Anyway, Hayes, you guys see all the wonderful social media information for Manny and I down below. You can send all your hate mail. We didn't get any hate for doubling down, Manny, on the Spider-Man stuff. Like, either people
There was one guy.
One guy? He did give us?
One guy, but we've already...
Oh, James?
Yeah. We don't...
Yeah, we We explained ourselves, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. Now it's your turn to explain to us why we are wrong, and you can do that at our social media, at the YouTube channel. Please subscribe. We broke 4,000. We want to break 10,000 before the end of the year. Help us do that. Like, share us with your family. And, yeah, check out all the great podcasts over at the Podcast Network. Look for the Genreverse logos as the podcasts are growing into that network. No, it's not separate. It's not bought, not changed, just expanding. Yeah, thank you guys so much for listening to this wonderful wild card Wednesday that actually turned out fairly decent. And yeah, guys, we'll talk to you next time. All right.